Hello, I'm Iswellyn, and this is Iswellyn Writes Stories for Adults. What is today? This is being recorded on Saturday, June 12th, and I have a book coming out. Pre-orders are now available for Finding Her Heart. This is an Orkai war bride story. What is the deal with the war brides? What is the deal with the orcs and all that, you know, kind of fantasy stuff there going on? What is that about? Okay, so, you know, that moment in the Lord of the Rings trilogies when they pull the bad guy, Uku, whatever, out of the dirt and the mud, and they're all just black and dark and muscly. And they are just fierce and ugly and just confident in everything they do. And they're going after, I see you, that you're here, EJ. And they're going after the Fellowship of the Ring, and they're doing the bidding of the dark evil, you know, Sauron and all that. I don't care, they're sexy. It was kind of that, and it was kind of what there is one of the, is he an orc? I think he's an orc. He rides a warg, and the warg is very wolf-like, and what is his name? I can't remember, but he loses in part of the overall story arc. There's a whole mythos about him. He's lost part of his arm to some elf and all this other stuff, and he's all bald. You know that guy, and he's all scarred up. What is his name? Oh, Lord, I can't remember. And him. It was him, too. And so then I twisted it. I put it in a different world. This is a planet far, far away, Dorcas. And on this planet, there is very modern kind of spaceport type of city. And people are coming in and out, and they have this industry and mining. And it's kind of worked by corporations. It's kind of run by corporations and different things. But it's a very gotten kind of corrupt and power hungry, and the families that are there are just, you know, the competition and the greed and the lust and the use of another human being. And she's calling. So then they go off, and some people, they create a humble life, and they I'm talking about my book now, and they. Oh, why is it so hard? I suck at describing my own book. Hi, EJ Frost. How are you?
Hi, I'm very well. How are you?
I'm doing good. So that wasn't too hard, was
no,
it?
That was easy.
Yeah. So did you not get the notice when I started? You must not have gotten the notice, but I just popped a link in.
Yeah.
And so you came in, and then you saw the chat heads and everything.
Yeah, once I got to the right screen, it's really easy to call in. That wasn't any problem.
Yeah, it's just getting there. It's just sometimes getting there, but it feels like it should be more complicated. So how are you today?
I'm all right. It's an absolutely beautiful day in Northwest England. We've had amazing weather today for probably the first time since last October.
Since last October. It's been a really bad spring.
Yeah.
I see you, Podbean investigation team. Thank you so much for coming in. They're checking out my sound because I can't, when the mic on the person on the other end, and it has happened several times, although it sounds really good with you, I can't turn up your volume. I have no way to turn you up. And we'll be like, can you just speak a little out? Can you just move it? Can you just, and sometimes it doesn't, nothing I do work. And then I don't notice until after the stream is over, and then it's a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
So I'm so glad you're here today. I always say that, but I'm always grateful for my guests, and you're way out in England.
I am.
And that's neat. You don't have a very, you're not accent-y.
Do I not have an English accent? No, I don't. I'm from Boston, Massachusetts. And we moved out here 17 years ago to be close to my husband's family.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah. Yes, I see you, Podbean Association. So you move out there and you don't have the accent, so you're pure American. Now, I have had a couple guests on the show, several guests actually, who are from England as well. And they are very picky about their accent if I get it wrong. If I say it's, you know, if I say, oh, you have a posh accent and they're from not a posh place, oh my goodness, I get corrected.
Yes.
I'm supposed to know. And Or say nothing, because, and I'll be like, oh, it's just wonderful. And it'll be some different accent that's maybe not posh. And they'll be like, oh, no, it's not wonderful. You know, they're not going to let me get away with that.
No.
Have you experienced that?
Absolutely. Brits are incredibly fussy about their accents. And I have to admit that with many of them, I don't actually hear the difference. It just all sounds like a British accent to me, frankly. But God forbid that I should say, oh, are you from Birmingham? And they're like, no. Oh, right. Sorry.
So,
it all sounds British to me.
No, I know. I've made fun of them before that. I actually wrote a whole book. One of the body poems I wrote, I pointed that out that I had no idea where he was from or what his accent was from. And then, you know,
right.
That was part of the poem. Yeah. They are, I've been schooled a couple times.
Yeah,
so really generally, awesome. Unless I compliment them or we'll talk, if I have a group in, everybody will talk and compliment, you know, it's interesting. So, and you've been out, tell me, 13 years?
17, yeah.
17 years. Wow. Yeah. Was there a culture shock? Were you treated as a, was there any kind of assumptions about your Americanness?
Yeah.
Or any of that?
Yeah. It was a huge culture shock at first. We moved from Boston, which is a fairly metropolitan city, to a real little village in England, Northwest England. And there were no Americans here when I first came. I was the only American, was sort of treated as this strange oddity. And people would constantly stop me and say, oh, you're not from around here. I was like, really? No. how'd you manage to figure that out? And just, also, the local accent is really strong. It's, if you've ever watched Friends, it's Daphne's, not Friends, sorry, Frasier. It's Daphne off of Frasier's accent. She's Manchester accent. And so the local accent's very strong. And so I obviously stand out quite a bit. And so, you know, they were sort of like, well, and then the next question is, why on earth would you move here? And I think people don't really appreciate what they have. You know, the grass is always greener.
Yes.
Living here is wonderful. I mean, there's a great quality of life here. I was working like a crazy woman in Boston. I was a trial attorney and I was working 80 hours a week and I never saw my family. And I was making all this money, but I never got to spend it because I was working so hard all the time.
Yeah.
And I remember the year that we decided we were going to move, I went to my boss. I didn't tell them I was leaving, but I said that I wanted a 5 days holiday after Christmas to go to England to visit my in-laws. And my boss looked at me and he said, seriously, not joking, vacations are for wimps. And he didn't approve my vacation request. It was after Christmas. Like, you know, it was the 5 days after Christmas. He wouldn't approve it. And so my husband came to England and found us a house on his own, which I moved in sight unseen. I'd never seen it when we moved here.
Oh, wow.
Because I couldn't get 5 days vacation, which just sort of tells you what my life was like. We lived in Boston.
Oh, my God.
So in comparison, the quality of life here is amazing.
The that sounds sucks. Miserable.
No problem. But the
weather sucks.
Amazing. The weather's awful. It rains all the time here. But
the
quality of life's amazing. And I wouldn't trade it in.
I am from Washington State,
Oh, where it rains also all the time.
Actually, yeah, there's quite a bit of crossover there. That the gray skies, even if it's not raining, you get winters with gray skies. Sometimes you get snow. We get a little bit more snow in Washington, but and a lot more ice probably. But the rain and the gray sky mood is about the same. The ocean is just as cold and gray. And yeah, it is. And so when I was over there a while ago, it was in the summer, and it was, I don't know, it was an 80, it was one of those 80 degree days that you'll get every now and then
Very
that are
unusual.
humid, that are he yeah. But just like in Washington, I'm like, I came over here for this.
This.
But
How delightful that I've come all the way across the Atlantic and had this huge jet lag just to have the same weather that we get back home. Yeah, it's great.
But as a creative, and I know you write, you're obviously here because you write and you have all these different series. I mean, I've always been drawn to Europe and England and the UK and all of that because castles.
Castles,
Castles.
absolutely castles. Castles and
And
cathedrals. I am such a big fan of
yes.
cathedrals. There are three in England that I haven't seen, but I
Oh.
absolutely love going to sightsee in historical places. And I was talking to my husband about this as we were driving somewhere the other day. And the names in England are just glorious. We have these adorably named villages,
Oh
and
yeah.
there
You
is
know,
sort of a
you remember when
theme.
Harry Potter came out and everybody was like, "Oh no." And I'm like, "That's just like in England. Excuse me, that's just like those weirdness, the cuteness, the like little the like wibbly wobbly la I don't know,
Yeah,
but
it's just a village down the hill, you know. It's
the
absolutely that way.
Oh.
So they're very quaint elements about living in England. And I live in a very quaint place. We live at the bottom of a farmer's field in a little house. And on Tuesdays, she brings the farmer, is a lovely lady. She brings eggs down, and we buy
Oh.
eggs from her. And the lambs are eating in the field at the back of our house right now. And
Oh.
when I go to the when I go to the butcher on Saturday, I'll be buying local lamb. So there's a lot to be said for this very rural life. It's really lovely. In many ways, the downside of this really beautiful rural life is sushi. We get no decent sushi. So I just drove about 20 minutes to go buy decent sushi and brought it back and had it for dinner. And that's it. We cannot get good sushi here at all.
No good sushi.
No, but other
Well,
than
that's the
that, it's a
thing.
delightful lifestyle.
That's amazing. That sounds really, really beautiful. It sounds a little bit, who's it? Michael McIntyre, he describes when they move out to the country. Yeah, the comedian, and he's like, and it gets dark, and it's like so
It
dark.
is so dark. It is so dark here. There are no
It's
street lights. We have this empty field behind our house with no street lights on it. And for years and years and years, I've had this recurring nightmare of a wave of werewolves pouring down over this hill. And you couldn't see them except for the shine of their eyes because it is pitch black on that hill.
Oh, I love
But yeah,
it.
it is very very rural and very quaint.
That's kind of amazing. So, thank you for sharing with me. That's what a delight to find out, the differences and that it exists. Because I think,
It definitely exists.
I'm thinking, that it's all, what is that, Jonesy something
Oh, Bridget Jones,
potato
no,
peel pie.
she, yeah, no, that's
Yeah, and
London.
no, the Jonesy, the potato peel pie side, it's a different movie. A potato peel, it's a World War II movie, but it's very pastoral and beautiful. And you go out, or Jane Austen, anything like that. I'm always thinking it's like that. But and when I
No,
was there, we kind of drove through it.
not so much.
It's not like that.
No,
No,
most of England's very urban.
there are a few more houses now, but
Yeah, quite a few.
there are building laws to, keep the
Yes.
country the country. Yes.
Yeah, there
Yeah.
very little of England is actually residential housing. If you look at maps and things, a surprising amount of England is still unsettled, which always sort of shocks me. We also have a lot of farming. Here still, which is good since we've just come out of the EU, so we're going to have to grow our own food now. So but a lot, there is still a huge farming industry, a huge agricultural industry.
EJ will be out there in the spring and she will
I'm telling you,
be.
there's an allotment gardens, which is sort of a communal garden space, about a 5-minute walk from our house, and I've been in a draw to get an allotment garden for since we got here, so 17 years, I still haven't gotten one. But I called the guy recently and was like, right, I don't know where I am on the list, but you need to move me up. We need to start growing our own food. How much do you want to move?
We're going to starve.
Yeah.
You know, get some cucumbers and tomatoes, just put them in pots and then live off those. Oh, I don't know.
Oh, well, we have those. Anyone who follows me on Facebook knows that my beloved husband, who has no green thumb whatsoever, has been growing tomatoes in the corner of my kitchen for 2 years. And they are the most stunted, deformed tomato plants anyone has ever seen. But he has three of them that he's very proud of. And one of them has recently produced a tomato, which he carries proudly around the house and proclaims in that very sort of Frankensteinian way that it's life. He's created life.
I've created life.
I think he's more proud of it than he is of our daughter. It's really sort of frightening.
Oh, no. This came from my seed.
I produced this thing. I've created it. I was like, okay, well done, honey.
Oh, pardon me. It's a little too. I was just like, braying into the microphone. So tell me, I know you have different series, so tell the audience what you write. Make sure you get all of them. I know it's quite a variety. You cross some genres. And so make sure you tell the audience what you write.
I have 8 books on Amazon right now, with a 9th up for pre-order and another, the 10th one's going up for pre-order shortly. And I write cross-genre. I can't stay in a single genre. I'm just sort of, you know, a bed hopper that way. What can I tell you? And so my first book is a science fiction romance called Snowburn. And that book is getting its sequel shortly, probably early 2022.
That was your first book. So when did you write
that? That was my very first book that I published back in 2014.
And you waited all this time for it. How did you do that? My OCD just is having a heart attack. I don't even have OCD and I'm having a heart attack.
I took a 5-year hiatus from publishing for a number of reasons, but primarily among them was that I was stalked online.
Oh, no.
So I had a really unpleasant experience with a stalker and I just pulled back from everything for a while. We were also affected by the Manchester Arena bombing. My daughter's friend was killed. I just pulled back from everything for a while and we just sort of regrouped for a couple of years.
Just regroup and take a breath and do what you need to do. So that was your first book and then the big break. And so what was your
first book and second book? I published Neon Blue, which is a paranormal, immediately after Snowburn. And then the stalking started and I took a big break, and then the Manchester Arena bombing happened. And so I took a break. And then I came back to publishing just over 12 months ago.
Now you are indie, right? You're doing it all on your own?
I am doing it all on my own. Yeah.
That's I've always what been I thought.
Indie. I had an agent back in 2013, 2014. And after seeing what happened to a friend of mine who published with Tor, I decided I was not going to go down that route. I was going to go indie. And so I researched how to publish independently for about 6 months and then got myself together and published Snowburn myself. And ever since then, I would never at this point do anything.
You'd
else.
Never go back, even if no, you got I'd like never, a big offer or anything?
No. I've had a couple of offers and no. It's just, it's not something I'd be willing to do at this point. I'm too controlling.
Oh, yeah.
To give up things like my cover, my decisions on my cover and my decisions on marketing, and just also how much time I'm willing to spend on things. Writing is not my full time occupation. I have a full time job, and so I need to be in control of my own schedule. And if I need to push a book back, you know, by a month because something's happened in my personal life, I need to be able to do that.
If I ever get that offer, I'm going to come to you for advice. I'll be like,
no, thanks.
I just want to see a book in Barnes and Noble on the shelf.
Yeah, no, that doesn't thrill me. I've had a couple books in bookstores and it doesn't.
Have you?
Yeah, and it just doesn't thrill me. I mean, local bookstores have been very willing to pick up my books. It's cute. Yeah, for a little while. And then you realize that you have to buy back all the books that they didn't sell. Which really sucks. there's no fun in that whatsoever.
No, I wouldn't have to do that if it was Tor. They would buy
them back for you, and then they take it out of your advance, which is great. The realities and particularly the finances of mainstream publishing are not what they once were. But all that unhappiness aside, so I came back to publishing about 16 months ago, and with a series called Daddy PI, which is a mystery romance, very heavy on the kinky side. The main character is a daddy dom, and he's the investigator, and his significant other is his little girl, and she helps him with the investigations. And I'm now on book 4 of that series.
And how's that going for you?
I love it. I really love it. I love writing it. I love interacting with readers on it. There's just nothing about that series that hasn't been an absolute pleasure to write and to read. Someone was asking me recently about whether I read my own books, and the answer is absolutely I do. They're comfort reads for me. I recently reread the fourth book just because I find the ending very emotionally satisfying. And it just it makes me happy. It just makes me really happy.
It makes you happy.
It does. It just makes me very happy.
So now it's heavy on the kink. You know,
very heavy
this is
on the
a
kink.
Not safe for work podcast. So I need you to tell me what the kinks are.
you name it. They're in there. No. The first three books are primarily age play, and there's a ton of role playing between the two characters. Her kinks are on the non-consent side, and so they do a lot of sort of capture and punishment scenes. The first book takes place on a cruise, and so it's a kinky cruise, and they're having lots of scenes on the cruise. And by far my favorite is one where they're role playing a capture scene where she is Princess Amber, and he plays the Dark Knight, and he captures her, flogs her, then they have lots of orgasms. So any scene
orgasms
that doesn't end with
happen.
Lots of orgasms, you know,
the no orgasms are happening. Well, I would hope so. I would
lots
hope
of orgasms.
So. So what kind of age play? I need specifics.
Right. Well, Emily is my heroine. She's the little, and she's more of a middle. So her young age ranges from about 6 to 14. And she likes to age play, be very young. She calls her dominant daddy. And they do lots of things that you would do with a younger person. So they will do puzzles together. They play games together, tons of role play. And Logan is a caregiver. He's a daddy dom. And he likes to make sure that she is well protected. And anytime she has very complex rules set up for her, which you can download from my blog. They have a complicated contract. And anytime she breaks a rule, he punishes her. And some of those are punishments. So, you know, they're games. And some of them are real punishments. In book 2, she has a very serious punishment for breaking several rules and a promise. And so those are a big deal. And I guess I enjoy writing the punishments more. They're more fun to write. But the punishments are a big deal too. And that kind of structure, the giving her of rules and making sure that she adheres to them, is incredibly important to their relationship.
What kind of research goes into these books?
Well, I've been in the lifestyle since my early 20s. So a lot of it's very practical experience.
How old ish are you now? You can
I'm
give
52.
Me an ish. Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm 53, so that's a lot of practice.
It's a lot. And Emily's character is very much based on a young man that I used to play with when I was in my 20s, who taught me sort of about littleness and what it means to feel free enough to completely let go of your inhibitions and fears and communicate with another human being on a very emotionally vulnerable plane, which was delightful. And I miss that. I'm not a little, and I don't have that relationship with my own dominant. So it's really fun and liberating to write about again.
Yeah, I would think. Yeah. Is there any, if it's quite different from what your lifestyle of you, what is, do you show up in your books? Do you see yourself in a different way in your books? Has there been any kind of, I know that they're romance and they're this kind of, you know, the the investigative and, mm-hmm. and that, but is there part of you in there? Where do you show up in your books?
I think there's a little of me in every character. Someone was complaining to me recently about one of the Doms who's an NYPD detective, and he plays the heavy a little bit in book two. And people were saying, oh, you know, I don't like him. And I was like, well, he's just doing his job. And they're like, no, he's not nice and he's not kind. And he comes across as always very heavy handed and he's too strict. And I was like, right, I'm all those things. You really don't want a scene with me, honey. Right? So I think there's a little bit of me, some element of me in every character that I write. And all of the stories have some huge part of my life and my personality. The Daddy P.I. book, the very first book, is definitely about my daughter moving out and becoming an adult and how I feel as a parent watching my kid fledge.
Yeah.
And that is absolutely what underlies that book. And then Missing Ink, the most recent one, is absolutely about our year in quarantine, coronavirus experience.
Yeah.
It's about claustrophobia and about being too close and yet also completely disconnected from people around you, and sort of how you create a new meaningful connection with another human being in a time when the connections seem almost impossible.
Yeah. This last year has just been weird for
bizarre.
Me. It's been bizarre in so many ways. The next question, I lost my question. I got caught in that. No, what I wanted to ask was, there are a lot of short 1 hour reads that are really hot and they do the daddy thing. And have you, as comparison for somebody who's been in the lifestyle and has some experience with it, is there any reality in those? What do I mean? Like they're not on Amazon anymore. I think they're probably independent somewhere. Alexa Riley books, I don't know. I've read erotica and that kind, romantic erotica, I guess, for years and years. And the daddy stuff didn't start coming out until probably the last 3 or 4 years, five years maybe at the most. You might have seen it once or twice. The first time I saw it, I thought, oh, maybe, no, I don't know, but I can read it. You know? But I noticed
I want to try this, but
exactly. It stood out because it was so, and it might have had undertones in some of the, it had undertones in some of the bodice rippers and whatever, but daddy, I didn't see that until probably, I'm trying to think when I saw it first in the book Night by,
Chris Ashley. Yeah.
Yes. That's the first time I saw it. And that's my favorite book of hers. I read all of them. About 5 or 6 of them. And I like that one the best. I just think he's the most dominant and he's the most interesting to me and he's the most. And then, So is there any reality in that, or have you noticed that even that kind of growth and change in the market?
It's not just growth and change in the market. It's also growth and change in the lifestyle. I mean, the young man that I played with 25 years ago now, did not call himself a little. He did not call me mommy. It was a dominant and submissive situation, but we didn't use those terms. And I wasn't terribly active in the clubs in Boston. I found relationships and sort of stuck with them, but I don't remember a ton of people using those terms. I think it's become much more socially acceptable. In the last 10 to 15 years, it was really not something I heard 25 years ago. I'm sure it was there. I'm sure people did call their significant others mommy and daddy, but you didn't hear a ton of it. But it's definitely grown, both in the lifestyle and then also in literature. In the last 3 to 5 years, the DDLG age play, daddy kink books.
I mean, it's as far as the books that you can find, it has just boomed.
I think there's some that are more on the realistic side, and then there are some that are more on the pure fantasy side. The ones that are more on the pure fantasy side, I think, appeal to people who are really just looking for spanking, and they're looking in a slightly different context. And there is nothing wrong with that. I love a good spanking story. Don't get me wrong. And then there's stuff that's more serious that really sort of delves into the mentality behind the age play and the daddy kink. And in that sense, I'm thinking of like Brianna Hale's books, which are really all about the psychology behind why you'd want this relationship with someone who's your dominant.
Yeah, I've read some of those. Some of the books seem they're so they almost read like how to manuals.
Oh, I hope mine don't read like how to manuals, but I get what you're saying. Yeah,
a couple I have picked up, and the details. And then if you do a series, the author makes sure to do the details in every book so they can be standalone. And if you read the whole series, it gets a little exhausting. But yeah, some of them feel like they are how to manuals. Not all of them. And then some of them are very, very much in the fantasy. I was thinking as you said that, kind of in the did I lose it? I just had a good thought. I don't know why this subject is making my brain just go all over the place. So bad.
Sorry.
So you were playing the mommy. I had a I got to interview, her name is Miss Pearl. She is a dom. And she I don't know if they do I don't think they do the mommy, but she's a dom. Did you, so that has shown up in your books in the men, or have you ever written any dominant female books, or are you planning to? I haven't read.
There are many dom characters, and we call it dame.
Dame.
A female. Dom is a dame. But there are many dames roaming around my books, and they're some of my favorite characters. Absolutely. I have not written a book that's completely focused on a mommy and little boy. I don't think I'm going to. That's sort of not my plan. But I'm very interested in the dynamic. And as I said, that's not what we called each other when I was playing so long ago. And that's not the relationship I have now. I'm actually submissive to my husband now. So it's very much, I've sort of played both sides of the fence and understand the mentality, I think, at least a little bit on both sides. And that's really what I sort of enjoy writing about. And I think, well, I've been told that I write dominant characters realistically, and I certainly run them by people who are dominants in their own relationships or D-types in their own relationships.
I don't expect men to be pookie. They do sometimes, but I don't expect any men to be really, you know, reading my books and going through are all her characters acting like real men? Would a real guy do that? You know, like some women do sometimes. And when we critique some of the other things that are written, I don't know I'm not their audience. That's all I know. But
not your target audience. Okay.
So you've been told that you're nailing, you know, able to get right that from that side, and that your male characters read like male characters. That's awesome, because I think that in romance, especially romance writers, and I think the readers too, we tend to write men how we want them to be and not always how they are.
Fantasy men.
And nobody complains about that at all.
Yeah. I definitely complain about that. I prefer characters to be realistic, and however they identify, if they identify as male, female, other, I just prefer them to be more realistically written. I get a ton of feedback on my books. My husband reads them. There are two gentlemen who have beta read for me in the past, and I know that I have a male readership because they contact me.
That's wonderful.
So I would think that they would be giving me negative feedback pretty quickly if they felt that my male characters were unrealistic.
They'd let you know. I like my women readers, my women beta readers, but my men are, when I ask a guy to critique something or look it over or check, they're so much more direct and it's quick.
I didn't like this.
Exactly. Yeah. They don't hold back. They're not worried about my feelings. They take me at my word that they want, that I
yeah,
want.
I want real feedback. They give it to you. Yeah.
Yeah. And I always wonder if, you know, my beta readers are just like, I just love everything you do and I would never say anything wrong.
No.
So I have found
those are
that
not my beta readers.
you know, I've done some pieces where there the guys have come back and said, no, your pacing is wrong. You need to build it. And the women will read it and like, oh, this is hot.
I love it. Yeah.
You know, and the guys will be like, no, you need to slow it down. In fact, I've had three guys say that to me. So I know it's an issue, you know, but the women have never, I've never had any women say it. And I, it had been something I'd been concerned about, actually. It had been something I wanted, I like the idea of having rhythm and the way things feel when you read them, not just
pacing is
for
so
titillation,
critical.
But but pacing. I like the idea of really good pacing and nailing it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it feels like accomplishment when I just, So that's awesome. I love that men read your books. It surprised me. I have to tell you that men would ever pick up. I was not, when I first published, that was not, I was not thinking that. That was...
Yeah, I didn't write for the male audience either.
Yeah.
And coming from a science fiction background, I've always known that there would be more male readers potentially than female readers because sci-fi is a heavily male-dominated market. But I was writing sci-fi romance from the beginning. And so I always figured I was targeting this fairly small group of women who read sci-fi but also want to read about sex. And so I didn't expect a lot of male readers, but I got them. And boy, did they give me feedback. So I've cultivated them. And now two of them beta read for me quite a bit. And the funny thing is that they've been very open, in talking with me about their own sort of situations, their own relationships and the conversations that they have both between themselves and their partners and with other men. And that's always the thing that I find the hardest to write. Men talking to men, that's an experience that women don't have. We're locked out of that, aren't we?
Yeah.
And so can I write men talking to men realistically? And that is the thing that I run by my husband, my beta readers constantly. Guys, does this write? Is this a conversation you would ever have with one of your mates?
Yeah.
And so that's really sort of my hardest part, writing scenes that are men talking to men. But yeah, I rely on the guys who read my books quite a bit.
I have not had to do scenes like that. I've managed
to
avoid it somehow.
I really enjoy writing them.
But my next series will have scenes like that. And it's when I was writing The Rough, I totally understand what you're saying is not, are you getting it right? Am I putting, because I put too much words in everything, especially when I'm writing. So it's not just that I talk a lot, but you know, when I write,
it's too much dialogue. There's too much conversation between characters. And yet when I watch men talk to other men, there's not just dialogue going on. There's a ton of body language. There's a ton of symbolism. Conversations that they have with each other contain a huge amount of references to things like sports and other sort of male-dominated activities that women don't have access to.
My kids, I have three sons and they do that. And they can be talking, have a whole subject where they're referencing a video game or quoting movies and music. Mm-hmm. And
you're an outsider in those conversations, aren't you? It's almost like they're talking sort of.
It's another language.
With another accent. That's right. It's a patois that you don't have any access to. And so that's something that I find fascinating. And I really love writing those scenes. I write them a lot. And I enjoy them just as much as writing a sex scene. Writing a scene between two men, I just think is fascinating.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's cool. I just have to be honest. I haven't picked up a book that I really wanted to read and settle into that wasn't more than a, you know, half an hour read or something. In almost 2 years, I've just been too busy writing.
You've been writing a ton, and also this has been a hard time to read. I mean, I think the coronavirus period has been difficult for a lot of people to really be able to settle into a book.
Yeah.
I used last year books were my escape last year. Whenever I felt anxiety mounting about going out in public or going to the grocery store was so laden with anxiety for me, I would disappear into a book for a couple of hours. And so I actually read 250 books last year, which is out of control, considering that I also published 3 books. Last year was a huge sort of book year for me. I don't think this year is going to be quite so book heavy, but I'm on track to read 200 books this year. And so I'm reading a ton. And that is absolutely a getaway from the anxieties of what's going on outside my four little walls.
I need to read because I forget how to I forget how to structure sentences properly.
It doesn't hurt to read a ton.
I always knew that I mimicked a lot when I went just from reading, that I just picked up stuff from osmosis. And if I'm only reading, just text or whatever, then I'm not getting, or poetry, which I've been into just terribly lately, then I'm not getting sentence structure. And I struggle with just how to start 10 sentences in a row, everything, you know. And so, that's amazing that I totally believe you got to read. It's why I write.
I absolutely write the stories that I want to read, and I read very widely. I do read a ton of romance, but I also read horror, and I read mysteries. I love reading mysteries, everything from paranormal mysteries to little cozy mysteries, British cozy mysteries. And they are an escape, but they're also a reminder of sort of the beauty of writing and how much we can give to readers by writing a story that's really captivating.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I can identify with that. I used to, I'm not going to go into what I used to do, but anyways, because I would like you to read. Did you bring something to read?
I can, if you give me a moment to fire up my iPad.
Yes, fire up your iPad, and I would love to have you read. I'm so glad you came on. We tried to do this before. I have to apologize. I'm such a fluff head sometimes. Part of it is my nasty sleep schedule, which doesn't exist.
I completely hear that. Our daughter going to university for 6 weeks, 6 whole weeks last year. It was a revelation to my husband and I, who I don't think we've slept through a night since she was born. I mean, you know, we're always up listening for her. There's no reason for it. She's a healthy kid. It's not like we were listening for her to stop breathing or anything. But, you know, you're just always aware of what's going on in the house as a parent. And then finally she went off to university and this huge weight lifted from our shoulders. Like the first 2 days we were looking at each other like, why is it so quiet in this house? What's going on? And then after that, we noticed that we were sleeping through. Like neither of us was up in the night. We were actually getting 7 to 8 solid hours of sleep. And we were like, oh, do you remember what it's like to be not tired, to wake up without huge bags under your eyes? And it was like, this complete sea change for the two of us. And then bloody hell, she came back, didn't she? Because the university's closed down. And then you're like, oh. What the hell? And it all went to pot. You know, our sleep schedules went out the window again. And now that she's just gone back for spring semester at the end of April, beginning of May. And we're sleeping through again. And I got up this morning, it was about, I don't know, 8:30 when I woke up. And my husband was like, did you get up in the night? And I was like, no, did you? And he was like, no, but somebody opened a window. And I was like, oh, I might have left it open before I went to bed. But, you know, both of us are sleeping through again. And it's great. It's absolutely great. We're like human beings.
Yeah, it starts when you're pregnant usually and goes and goes and goes. Yeah, very much. It's funny how much kids can change you. Yeah. Yeah.
They just ruin your life in so many ways.
They do.
So I have two things that I could read from, but I think I'm going to read from Max's Bumble, which is going to be book four.
From Max's Bumble?
Yeah, Max's Bumble is book four in the Daddy PI series.
That's a very English word, Bumble.
I love the word Bumble. It has so many meanings. The first is, you know, bumbling, that you're not very socially apt. You are a fool in some ways. So that's definitely one meaning for this title. And the other is that his love interest likes to role play. And one of the role play things that she likes is to play a bumblebee. So Max's Bumble has a number of meanings. But here we go. So chapter one. When I was 9, Uncle Max gave me a magic 8-ball. I think he bought it at the truck stop on I-9 on Christmas Eve when he found out that neither my mom nor her current boyfriend had gotten me anything for Christmas. That boyfriend didn't last through New Year's. Uncle Max did. So did his magic 8-ball. It's sitting on the corner of my desk. It's substantially more battered than it was when he gave it to me, wrapped in newspaper because no one had wrapping paper left on Christmas Eve, sitting on the kitchen table because we didn't have a Christmas tree. It's been with me through 3 tours of duty, 17 ops I can't talk about, even with the man on the other end of the phone, who is as close to me as anyone in the world, as close as I will ever let anyone get. "Clever girl," the man on the phone says. "I hope you're talking to Emily rather than me," I respond. There's a sweet giggle at the other end of the line. Logan must have me on speaker. I hate when he does that, because hearing Emily laugh, hearing the soft, sweet note that's in her voice right now, it stirs me. I ease the edge of my hand against my dick, shifting it to a more comfortable position as it twitches and fills, grateful that we're not on a video call. There's silence, and I realize they're waiting for me to say something. "What have you done now, clever girl?" I ask. Emily is clever. Her geekitude rivals mine. She can keep up with me when I talk X-Men and Tolkien and Heinlein. She understands why I'd rather spend my evenings reading rather than partying in the mind-numbing, soul-eating way that my peers seem to enjoy. Add to that the smart, well-read mind, her sweet face, edible body that I've seen way too much of, and the endless love that she showers on my best friend, and it's no wonder that my cock is hammering against my palm, even while my guilt chews its merry way through my gut. I thought being pinned down under fire was bad. I had no idea how much wanting my best friend's girl would fuck me up. That's it.
I think I need more. Okay, fine. And all your books are on, where can listeners find your books?
The 8 that are published are on Amazon, and there's one on Wattpad and a couple on Archive of Our Own.
I didn't know you were on Wattpad. Mm. Did I know you were on Wattpad? Oh. I need to check that out. Okay, that's fantastic. Thank you. I want to now, is there anything else I need to pick your brain? Because how much does your legal background go into these books? Because they're PI books. Is there any of that in there?
So I worked in a Boston law firm for 8 years, and then I've worked in law firms over here for 17. I've worked with a number of private investigators, including a really wonderful one in Boston who was ex-something that he wouldn't talk about. But he had a signed picture of him and Ronald Reagan shaking hands on his wall. So probably CIA. And he taught me a lot of investigative techniques, which were useful when I was working on cases, particularly sort of interview techniques. Mm-hmm. And those definitely play into the books a huge amount. So I've read a lot about interviewing, and I have some practical experience doing interviews. And those absolutely are the foundation of Logan, who's the PI in these books, his investigative techniques.
That's very cool. That's very, very cool. What would you tell, I've just been doing this in case somebody who is interested in writing actually listens. usually it's people who are like, oh, kink. No.
That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm totally happy to talk about kink forever.
I don't know. I love my listeners. The 5 people who know.
That's not true. I saw the number of subscribers. That's not true.
They're fantastic people. They come on and they make me laugh and we engage. And so, no, I love them. Brilliant. And I'm not making fun of you. I'm not kink shaming. But what would you tell a new author? Obviously go indie.
Indie isn't right for everybody. I really don't think it is. I have friends who I've talked to extensively about sort of their plans and their abilities, and I don't think that indie publishing would be right for them. You have to have some level of marketing, maybe not experience, but definitely willingness to engage in marketing. Otherwise, your books are going to go up on Amazon, but no one's ever going to find them because there are millions of books on Amazon.
Yes.
So you have to be willing to sort of what I call relentlessly market yourself. And if you're not willing to do that, then indie really isn't right for you because you're going to publish books that no one's going to read. So it's just the truth. So I don't think that indie is right for everyone. And you have to find your level. If you are comfortable marketing your own books and if you are willing to spend a lot of time marketing your own books, then indie might be right. If you're willing to accept a ton of, criticism, on your books, then Indie might be right, because I don't think it's enough to just slap a book up on Amazon. I really do think you should go through an editorial process. And I am blessed in having a lot of people who read my books and give me constructive criticism, both on a professional and a non-professional level. I have professional beta readers who read the books, and then I have non-professional beta readers who read the books. And happily, they don't just say, oh, it's wonderful, I love it. They give me very constructive criticism. And sometimes that constructive criticism is hard to hear. You know, there's a saying in literary criticism called kill your darlings. Mm-hmm. And it means that if there's something on a macro or micro level that sort of stands out to you as something you care too much about, maybe you shouldn't be there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have darlings within my own books. I have sentences that I'm just very proud of. And I wrote that. And I have characters that I'm way too invested in. And I have scenes that mean too much to me. And when someone says to me, you know, either that doesn't belong or it's killing the pace or, you know, that sentence doesn't make any sense. Oh, that hurts. That really hurts to hear. But you have to be open to that process, to making a book better. And if you're really not about that process, then again, maybe indie publishing isn't for you. And the place that you need to be is in more traditional publishing, where you're going to have an editor who controls the editorial process rather than you. So I don't think one shoe fits all. I do think there are lots of ways into publishing now, many more than there were sort of when I started out in 2014, when indie publishing was a really new, weird thing. Mm-hmm. And there are so many opportunities now that I don't think we had 6-7 years ago. So, you know, really take a look around and see what suits you. Don't just jump in and say, oh, well, my friend did this, so I'm going to do this too. Really look around and see what suits you and your personality before you decide sort of which publishing route you're going to go down to. And understand that not everything has to be published and paid for. I have a lot of stories on both Archive of Our Own and Wattpad that I'm perfectly happy to give away. The beginning book in the Daddy PI series is a free reader magnet. It's 82,000 words long. It's not an insignificant amount of work. Wow. And I'm totally happy to give that away free every day of the week, because, I really want readers to come into my books and know what they're getting before they decide to plonk down their $3.99. Mm-hmm. So not every book has to be paid for. You may decide that you want to give your work away, or you want to put it behind a paywall, or you want to go and have, you know, patrons on Patreon, or you want to pursue Kindle Vella, which is a really exciting new thing that's sort of coming to Amazon, or you want to do Dreamy or whatever you want to do. But there are lots of opportunities now. And it is definitely no longer I have to query an agent and then the agent has to do, you know, a book fair and I have to be picked up by a traditional publisher, or, oh, I have to get my own book ready and stick it up on Amazon. Those are not the only two routes anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very in-depth answer. I appreciate that. That is a good, great answer. I know that I wouldn't have self-published. There's no way. It's not the marketing. It's the details of getting the book out and getting it done correctly and tracking it that I just, and the sort of the type A personality stuff that some of it requires that I do not have. And, and there is no way I would have, I could just see formatting. I'd be done. Nope.
There are a million moving parts to it, and it doesn't hurt. I mean, I worked for a marketing firm for 4 years after I got out of college before I went to law school, and that it definitely doesn't hurt. That experience is stuff that I bring into play all the time. That doesn't mean you can't do it if you've had no marketing experience and if you've never formatted a book before. You can learn all this stuff, but there is a sharp curve to it, and maybe that's not something that you want to do, or maybe that's not the best use of your time.
Yeah. And that's why every time somebody has actually published the book, even if they're not selling it, maybe they need to go back and do some things. But still, you got that book up on Amazon all by yourself.
You did. And someone actually paid for it. And that's the thing that hits me every day. When I log into my Amazon account and I see that people have actually spent their hard-earned money to buy my book, that's what makes it worthwhile. Honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I'm communicating with my people.
Yes, I do. I've totally, I've reached my tribe if they've actually finished my novel.
And it gives me such a sense of satisfaction to know that I had tried my life, spent my life. We're the same age, so I spent my life trying to find my people to communicate with them, mm-hmm. and it happened in the books finally.
Yeah.
And that I give a, yeah, exactly. I don't want to talk about me. Lord, no, I didn't realize how terrible I am about that.
No, you're fine.
That's not true. I am awful. But
it's tremendously gratifying when a reader reaches out to you, and a lot of them do all the time, and says, this book meant something to me. It made a difference
yes.
in my life. It gave
yes.
me 6 hours of reading pleasure, or gee, I really identified with this character, or even better, gee, I think I might have some of this in me, and I want to talk with my partner about it. That is so gratifying.
You know, the biggest thing that I didn't realize about Omegaverse mm-hmm. that was some of my favorite part of Omegaverse, and when I came on to Twitter and Dirty Twitter and
Dirty Twitter?
It is. It's called Dirty Twitter.
It is,
Twitter.
I know. It's absolutely Dirty Twitter.
When I got on Dirty Twitter, I had no clue. I did not know that there were echoes of DS and BDSM in it.
Oh yeah, big time.
And that I was writing it because it was what I liked, and yeah. it was kind of the characters that I'd always liked, mm-hmm. From the bodice rippers on down. You know, yeah. from when I got my hands on my first Dolores Cave ebooks.
They oh were, yeah, just long stuff history. I liked. Of this.
Oh yeah, and so, but I didn't know. I just. And there were rules, and you had to do this. And I'm like, I didn't. No,
rules.
You don't. You didn't do that. I don't like that. And, you know, the trigger warning. No bodice ripper ever had a trigger warning.
No, no bodice ripper ever had a trigger warning. I was reading a book from, it must have been 35 years old. And I'm reading along. I'm like, gee, this is getting like really non-consensual. And sure enough, bang, there's a full book of non-con scene. I was like, whoa, there's no warning for this at the beginning of the book.
Nobody
so yeah, they didn't, boy, they didn't have any of that 35 years ago. They just thrown in there, and you know, the reader catches catch can. Wow.
You know Laurel K. Hamilton, right?
Oh yeah.
When they came out, no trigger warnings. I'm no like, I would have liked one for the mystery with the children. I would have liked
oh,
one.
Yeah.
That book. I
oh,
would have
absolutely.
Put that book
and Stephen
down.
King. And Stephen yes. King has no trigger warnings. I mean, it was in horror, but you had no idea what you were getting. I was talking with like a dark romance group about the worst book I've ever read. And I was like, oh yeah, it's this book. It's called Cry for the Demon. And there's a non-con scene with a shark shifter. And I was like, you know, and there's no trigger warning on that book at all. You just walk into that scene. It's like, whoa, what did I get?
So, and you're there. Yeah, I've read some books where I'm like, oh, I wish I could watch. I need to wash my eyeballs now. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that we were doing that, and they disturbed me.
Yeah, is that where we went? Whoa. Yeah.
I wasn't ready for that.
No. And they're yeah, not in exactly. the right section. Like, you know, there's no section for erotic horror in you know, Waterstones or Barnes and Noble, but
yeah, that's very true.
Boy,
very
all true. Of a sudden you're in the horror section, and then the next thing you know, you're reading about shark shifter non-con. It's like, whoa.
Oh no,
what
oh,
alternative
Lord.
Universe did I just wander into?
yeah, exactly. And yeah, so I was not prepared for, there was
no.
so much I had no clue on that I've learned in the last year, and that our mutual friend Meryl has seen fit to educate me on that. And Dirty Twitter. And yeah. Anyways, I thank you so much for coming on. I'm so glad we could connect and
My
hear
pleasure.
About your books.
Thank
I
you.
Will, I'm not sure when this podcast will be done, but I will tag you and everything. It may be a
Lovely.
Couple weeks actually. But I will get it up. And, in fact, yeah, we'll talk about that later.
No problem. Lovely.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you
thank
very much
you
for this.
So much.
I appreciate it. All right. Have a good night.
Bye. Bye. I'm doing some songs. Should we clap? That was pretty awesome. Thank you guys so much for listening in. Thank you, EJ Frost, for sharing your story. I love that you live in England. See, that's how much I love it. But just your journey and some of the steps along the way, the creation of your novels, and how they fit in just life. Just life. Books are so important. Bookstores are important. Words are important. And, you know, all the stuff I always say about how it builds community and connection and empathy and understanding. And it may open your eyes to something you've never even thought that you liked. So, yeah, pick up a book and tell your story. There are so many different ways to do it, right? Tell your story. Don't wait. Do it. Thank you so much. Have a good day.